Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Trace Kerr.
And I'm Amy Barton. The other day I was doing some research and stumbled across a Reddit wormhole about entomologists and coffee allergies. There was a lively discussion going on, and digging a little deeper, it turns out there's more to the story, and it got me to thinking, what about facts out there that sound made up but aren't? Today on Brain Junk, we're diving into everything you've ever wanted to know about stuff that sounds false but is actually true. The first subject that I ran into, you need to sit down. Russia is bigger than Pluto.
No, that can't be true.
I was completely like, viva la Pluto, it is a planet. You know, I thought about getting the t-shirt and then I stumbled across that fact and thought, oh, nope. Sorry, Pluto. I've switched teams. So that was true at a certain point, but this is one of those that sounds false, is true, but then it's false again. So originally when they did this first, like they started comparing statistical figures about sizes of things. They're like, oh my gosh, Russia's bigger than Pluto. And it edged it out by about a half million square kilometers.
Hold on. So when you say bigger than Pluto, so like if I took Russia out of the Earth and then made it into a cylinder kind of thing.
Yeah. We're making like big wrapping motions with our hands. I'm imagining Russia, like we're wrapping it up like Play-Doh. Okay. That was my understanding. Yeah.
Is that yeah. Okay. That's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. At the time when that initial study came out, they're like, yeah, Pluto is not big enough to be considered a real planet. Russia, however, is.
Oh,
insult to injury. However, happily for Pluto, we have new technology, and the New Horizons mission was able to more carefully measure and discover that, no, in fact, Pluto is about a half million square kilometers bigger than Russia.
Wow.
Win for Pluto. Go get those t-shirts out again. Pluto's bigger than Russia. Woo!
Okay. Next big fact, we're going to do a fun self-experiment. With your palm facing up so you can see the underside of your wrist, touch your pinky to your thumb on your right or left hand. Pinky to thumb.
Okay.
And then you're going to bend your wrist slightly forward. And if you're like most average people, you're going to see a tendon pop up in the middle of your wrist.
Good news, team. I'm average.
And make sure you do it on both sides because not everybody has it on both sides. That tendon is called the palmaris longus muscle. And it's one of the things that we have in common with our tree-climbing primate cousins like orangutans.
Do they have to shave orangutans' wrists to see this? Are they hairy?
No, I don't think so.
Excuse me, I'm going to do some Googling.
Yeah, okay. You Google. Back. You look that up. Let me know. But if you don't see one, or if you have only one on one side, you're not alone, and you're probably more evolved than the rest of us.
I really like the idea of the one on one side, but not the other. Like, you're in process. Or is that like you're born partially evolved and you're half done?
Yeah, your half of you is more evolved and the other half of you is knuckle dragging through the dirt.
Good news, bad news.
Yay. But having the palmaris longus varies greatly within Caucasian, African, Asian, and indigenous populations. In fact, in one study of the general population, 4 to 14% of people had a missing palmaris longus muscle. And 8 to 16% of people had bilateral, that's only on one side, the palmaris muscle. Like I said, the reason why you're more evolved if you don't have it is because we don't need it anymore. We used it for climbing trees or like if we walked on our hands, which we don't. So nowadays, if you're lucky enough to have one and you need to repair a droopy eyelid or manage facial paralysis, or sometimes do lip augmentation, we use that tendon because it's, you know, for that. And then you won't have it because they've used it to fix something on you that's broken.
That's like carrying a spare tube with your bike.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah. We're less evolved, but more prepared.
Yes, I love that. That's terrific.
Where are we going next?
Well, it's along the lines of evolution, but we're talking micro. So one thing I read on Reddit was that entomologists can become allergic to ground coffee. And that is partially true. What actually happens is that when an entomologist studies, for instance, cockroaches, they are in frequent contact with this. And so particular bugs might sting and you might eventually develop an allergy because of frequent contact with that thing. The coffee part comes in, and this is super wonderfully gross. But there's a threshold of acceptable amount of insect parts in our food products.
Yes. Yeah, that's like making hot dogs. You just don't want to know how that happens.
So I Googled ground coffee's acceptable threshold.
Oh, God.
So this is my favorite thing that will be on the Brain Junk podcast website to date. And it is the FDA's food defect action level spreadsheet.
Ooh.
So coffee, the government will intervene if the average is 10% or more by count of insect infestation. 10%, friends.
And you know what's scary is, now I'm not sure if they do it exactly this way, but my husband Chaz, Dr. Chaz, is a chemist. And so the way they figure out some of this stuff with pills and things is you're going to take a portion of it, mm-hmm. not the whole sample. So let's say you have 1,000 pounds of coffee. You're just going to take a scoop. You're going to dump that, and then you're going to go through it, and somebody's going to count those pieces.
Ooh, and so if they take the scoop off the top, those bugs are all... Yeah.
My coffee tastes so much better when it's cricket flavored.
There was one example where an entomologist would go way out of his way to find a place. This was before Starbucks was on every corner. They would go way out of their way to find a place that would freshly grind the coffee.
What you're saying is that an entomologist who works with, say, cockroaches, mm-hmm. foods that are grown or produced in places that would have a higher proportion of cockroaches. So it might not just be coffee.
Right. Exactly.
It could be your cornflakes. It could be your oatmeal. Wow.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to find out more acceptable contaminant levels, food defect action levels,
go to the FDA website for a fun Friday night.
Don't ever look this up, Mom. She's gonna. This is a fast way to lose weight if you have some issues with these kind of things. But I loved it. I looked through this website. Like, I think it had processed cheese.
Oh.
It was so great. I spent a really fun half hour looking at food defect levels and all the things that could be food defect levels. My Fitbit just got excited because I think I reached 10,000 steps talking about this because I love it. So entomologists aren't actually allergic to the coffee. They can still have whole bean, but might actually be allergic to the bugs in the coffee. So,
oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, another example of the body doing amazingly horrible things and playing tricks on you is a kidney transplantation. So we're going to go in a completely different direction. Instead of allergies, you now have kidney disease, which is not funny. But this is interesting. Most of the time when a person gets an organ transplant, doctors take out the old thing and mm-hmm. replace it with a functioning organ.
Yeah.
When you have a kidney transplant, most of the time they usually leave in the old kidney.
Oh, golly.
Yeah. The reason why I came across this, again, Reddit. All hail uh-huh. Reddit. There was a person asking about, is this actually true? And a woman said that her husband had 4 kidneys.
Oh.
And I thought, that's absolutely no way. And so then I read all these different white papers, and those are, let's see, science papers where, you know, it's got lots of PhDs across the top and mm-hmm. research and all that kind of stuff. So I read a bunch of papers, and they do leave them. It's called a heterotopic transplant. That's when you leave the native organ and you put in another one. And the reason why they do this is because taking out a kidney is major surgery. And
it's not snip snip.
Well, yeah. And the kidney is so involved in the whole process of cleaning the blood and getting rid of toxins that taking it out and putting in a new one while the new one heals, the patient has to be on dialysis. And they've found that if they just leave the old one in and tuck the new kidney in just a little lower down.
Okay.
It's like you're adding on a block to your subdivision.
Yeah, that's what I was just wondering is, do they splice it in above?
Below.
Or is it travels through the old, doesn't do anything, or doesn't do as much?
And then they just tuck it into your pelvis. It's down in there. And they've also found that sometimes the native kidney, the old one, the broken one, mm-hmm. will sometimes start to work better when some of the load is taken up by the new kidney. I almost feel like it's kidney shame.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm imagining a divorce situation and the hot new wife. And so the old kidney tries to shape up a little.
She's like styling her hair. She's getting some new clothes. Yes. It's exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's your kidneys and the amazing things that they can do or not do.
It's kind of amazing. Okay, here's an amazing animal fact. It is not extra kidneys, but I came across a link, and it's probably on Reddit too, but how dolphins and sea lions have been used in the armed forces. It sounds like one of those crazy World War II things, but it actually had its heyday in the 60s. Dolphins and sea lions, well, let's tell you some statistics. The ability to detect and find targets at very deep depths and very murky waters is greater than that any person could do. One, my favorite thing that I found when I was reading, they did a test in San Diego in 2011, where they had a diver try to sneak into the harbor five different times they sent him in, and each time the Navy deployed dolphins and sea lions to patrol the area. Both animals caught the diver on every one of his five attempts, and on one of the attempts, the sea lion even managed to attach a clamp to the diver's leg.
What?
So clamped it on, and the handlers reeled the diver to the surface like a fish. Flipper might really be, you know, combat flipper.
I've heard about the dolphins, and in fact, we're going to have to put some footage on the website to show you, because I've seen training videos of dolphins going and they retrieve something that looks like a missile. With they've got a special hook thing that they go out and they get it and retrieve it and bring it back.
Yes, and the sea lions have done the same thing. They can put a clamp on a thing, like an unarmed test ordnance they've done tests on, and they can clamp it and bring it back. Whereas a diver, it's too murky and they can't see it, and their capacity is greater without equipment failure.
Right, because they can go deeper and farther and longer.
But we'll find some links so you can take a look. A few shorties that don't merit great research, I'm just going to tell you the thing. The one that I thought was super interesting is that woolly mammoths existed at the same time as the pyramids still. And that's sort of a thing that I associate with dinosaurs and the Ice Age. And
yeah, right. Like forever ago. Although
there might be guys riding on woolly mammoths. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, people and woolly mammoths were around at the same time. Well, yeah. I guess like Neanderthal people were around and
pyramid building people. Yes. So that's a fun fact that doesn't merit a whole lot of research. It's just true. They existed at the same time, but you don't really think about that. It sounds crazy, but it's really true. Another one of those that bends my brain even more is that Cleopatra existed closer to the iPhone than to the pyramids. And I very much associate her with that.
That time of pyramids, yes.
Yeah, with lots of gold lame and flowy skirts.
Okay, so not Elizabeth Taylor.
Elizabeth Taylor also existed closer to iPhones.
Meanwhile, most of our audience is going, who? Look her up, guys.
This one's for you, Mom, Elizabeth Taylor.
Oh, man.
Our moms know.
Well, so since we're talking about Egypt, let's talk about hippopotamuses.
Yes.
Hippopotamuses. I don't know. So we're going to talk about them. I was looking on Pinterest for fun science things, and one thing that kept coming up was that hippos have pink milk. You know, you'd see a milk bottle and it's got pink stuff in it, and then there was, and I thought, okay. Doing some research and a little bit of a deep dive. No, hippos do not have pink milk. But the reason why people have gotten off on that direction, that tangent, is that hippos have red sweat, sometimes called blood sweat. Hippos secrete hipposudoric acid and norhipposudoric acid, two chemicals from glands all over their skin. One of those turns red upon contact with air, and the other turns an orange color. Together, they make a pink sweat.
I can't decide if that's more cool because they are like the Romans, and I am covered with the blood of my enemies, and I'm coming for you, or if it's like they're from Alien and they are oozing acid. I don't know.
Oh, I didn't even think about
that. Both of those things make me super happy. I like both of those things.
But what's cool about this red sweat is it does several things for the hippos. It acts as a sunblock. It acts as a moisturizer. I mean, you think about it, you spend all day in the water. I don't know about you, but I take a shower and I'm all dried out. I can't even imagine spending 8 hours in water. It acts as a water repellent and as an antibiotic. Not only are they pink and cute and they make their own sunblock, moisturizer, water repellent. If I could get that all in a bottle,
yeah,
that'd be great.
I wonder if it had the same effect
on
people.
Yeah, one thing I wondered is if it smelled.
Yeah.
And I didn't find any particular information.
Friends with the zookeeper.
I know. Well, I did watch this great video, which we will put on the website. It was zookeepers talking about this pink milk and debunking it and explaining the whole thing. And they didn't talk about that, but it was something I was curious about. So we've hit on a whole bunch of facts.
Yeah, we've been all over the place today, and I think we'd like to close with one final fun fact that Harvard is older than calculus.
Okay, now you told me this earlier, but I immediately jumped on Google because I was like, no, it's like from the Greeks. It's like, it's been around forever. We've been using it to measure things and build things. And you're like, no, it's from the 17th century. And I said, that's ridiculous. And then I went online.
Now that I found my stats, Harvard is 1636. Calculus is late 17th century when that really developed and clicked in and became a more formalized thing, a mathematical thing. Math isn't my thing.
I don't even really know how that's possible. I mean, you're telling me this and we've looked at it and I'm having trouble.
You can write to us. Go to brainjunkpodcast.com. If you know more about the history of calculus,
let us know and we will talk about it later.
Maybe.
Unless you send us math worksheets and then I'm sorry, but it's not going to happen.
Come visit us at Brain Junk Podcast. We've got a lot of fun stuff on the website, including more links with, I'm hoping we can find the blood, sweat on the hippos. That's what I'm excited to see.
Okay.
Juxtaposed with some scenes from the movie Alien. We probably aren't allowed to do that. I don't know.
No. But you'll hippo see. Blood, sweat, yeah. And then dolphins and sea lions.
Yes.
Doing more than we ever could underwater. And
maybe a picture of Elizabeth Taylor.
And a diagram of perhaps how it looks with all those extra kidneys in there. For this and other fantastic episodes, look for Brain Junk wherever you find your podcasts, like on iTunes and Google Play Store. And if you're into pictures, you can find us on Instagram at Brain Junk Podcast.
You can also find us on Twitter at My Brain Junk. We'll catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know. And I guarantee you will not be bored.